Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Did so slowly to the problems and, in fact, said some incendiary things the other way. I don't know that it's necessarily, you know, the kids at the smartest schools who got this. I think it maybe have initiated with them. But they're talking about 250 athletes. And, you know, that means Oregon. That means Washington. And the only place where there's actually been any organizational pushback is Washington State. So that maybe it's not just where you go to school. It's how you sort of view your own education. Because there are plenty of smart kids at USC and UCLA. There are smart kids at Utah and Colorado. It's really about, you know, A, whether you're ready to sort of put your scholarship on the line for something you truly believe in. And I think that's probably school neutral.
It takes brains to do it, but more than anything else, it takes guts. I mean, really, it takes guts to stand up to bullying. And this is tantamount to standing up to a bully. When you know that you're being taken advantage of, when you know that someone doesn't just have the upper hand today, but exists in a world where the upper hand is theirs and theirs alone at all times, to say enough is enough. It takes courage of conviction. And in a sport as big and wide where really one voice does not matter, it takes organization. I think that the organization available to kids today may not have been available necessarily, not as widespread anyways to the Missouri team, not used as prolifically maybe by the Missouri team as we're watching, you know, West Coast teams embrace groupthink. And it's a hell of a situation. I mean, it really is. We'll get to this list of player demands, I promise you, before the end of the show. It's fascinating. We're going to kind of go through them piece by piece. I want to get a little Niners in, though. I want to get a little Niners because we got Rich Aurelia coming up at 4:15. That gives us 10 minutes to talk a little football. Richard Sherman was on the microphone today talking about how being in Santa Clara is actually a little bit of a help to the 49ers. It's a lot easier to stay in your apartment in Santa Clara than it is in New York, Miami, Los Angeles, Chicago, New Orleans, and a few other towns out there that know how to have a good time. Santa Clara, a little bit more of a sleepy bedroom community, if you will. And Richard Sherman was talking about the risks of leaving the facility.
I think the coaches are emphasizing it, but at the end of the day, these are grown men and these are pros. You know, if they're going to trick it off, they'll get quarantined. They'll get replaced. It'll be unfortunate. That's why we have testing every day, so they can catch it quick. But I think on a team like ours, and you know, we're uniquely constructed to deal with this, because you know, obviously we're in Santa Clara. There's not a huge nightlife. You know, it's not like we're in Atlanta or Texas or Miami or Las Vegas or LA, where there's a lot of distractions, a lot of places you can go, a lot of things you can do to get yourself in trouble. I think our team is incredibly focused because of how close we were to winning the Super Bowl last year, and how, you know, that taste in their mouths is a bit of discipline in itself. You know, that hunger, that angst, is discipline in itself. So I think our team is incredibly committed and driven towards that goal. And I think that in itself will be discipline enough. You know, obviously we'll have the conversations, but, you know, those aren't things that are in anyone's control, but the guys being disciplined.
All right, Ray and Matt, what do you think is going to keep the Niners more COVID-free? A return to the Super Bowl or the fact that Santa Clara is super boring?
Well, the Super Bowl's in a minimum 6 months, I'm gonna opt for Santa Clara being not up to Richard Sherman's entertainment standards.
I gotta say, they better hope that's not it, because it really doesn't take that long to get to San Francisco or Oakland,
or San Jose, for that matter.
Yeah, I mean, like Santa Clara. Santa Clara's boring, but there's plenty of trouble to get into within an hour's drive. And so if it's just, I can't find anything to do keeping guys inside, it's going to be a bad situation. Because there's stuff to do, man. There's stuff to do around. So, you know, I know he's being tongue-in-cheek a little bit.
So
but,
hey, there's stuff to do in your own apartment that you can get in trouble with. So.
That's the thing. He's right with his main point, which is these adult humans have to be disciplined, or we're going to be in trouble. And that's just what it is. That's how we all live now.
You know what's funny, too? You see an awful lot of the articles saying that, you know what professional athletes do? They spend money. They go out with, you know, in fast cars to meet fast women. They have libidos that are insatiable, and so on and so forth. You know what these guys also are? Highly compensated, total professionals. And you got to be really mature. In many, even if you're not mentally mature, you've got to be mature enough to have the discipline on some level of life that it takes to reach the NFL. Do you know how hard it is to be in the NFL? Do you know how next to impossible the odds are that you will ever pick up an NBA minute? I mean, these guys have so many reasons to take this seriously beyond their own health. That, you know, if it means a little less fun and a little less in between the sheets action, any reasonable man takes that deal. I mean, come, it's amazing that we talk about grown men as kids. And look, we do that because when someone in sports steps out of line, they get the headlines. The vast majority of everyone who's ever been a professional athlete has never been arrested, is smarter than you think, is careful with their money. I mean, those guys don't just make, there's no headlines for a life well balanced. It's only the guys who get out of balance that get the attention. There are a lot more guys in balance than out of balance throughout the history of professional sports.
Yeah, but I think the other thing to note here is that because it is such a an odd lifestyle compared to most of the others, it also means you've got to have not only your own level of maturity, but the leaders of your team have to be men and or women of the kind of quality and influence that if you start thinking about getting out of line, you think about the guy who runs your clubhouse or your locker room. And you go, I don't want to disappoint him. And it's why it's hard to be an effective leader in professional sports, why there are so few of them, and why when they speak, they should be heeded. And I think in San Francisco, as in Seattle, Richard Sherman was a voice that everybody else galvanized towards. And because he had his eyes firmly affixed where they should be, he took everybody else with him. You didn't see a lot of screwing around in Seattle when he and Camp Chancellor and Earl Thomas and the Legion of Boom were there, because there was a standard that they'd set. And it's a standard that everybody else adhered to, because among other things, yeah, Pete Carroll could punish you, but having to explain yourself to Richard Sherman or Earl Thomas is its own weight. And I think that needs to be factored in too. Yes, you have to be mature, but you also have to have a healthy, not fear, but respect for your betters who dress next to you.
Well, that's leadership, right? I mean, that's what leadership is convincing people to do things based out of respect for you. I mean, ideally, that's what leadership is. I think that's one of the huge reasons Richard Sherman was signed by the 49ers, is they thought they would be able to put together a talented team, but they knew they needed some leadership. And, I mean, to say that's been a success is an understatement as far as the Richard Sherman experience goes. So this is, I think, in many ways, always going to be Sherman doing what Sherman does. And that's getting respect and getting people to listen.
A good saying that I do not disagree with coming across the text line, a person's restraint goes as far as their options, which is good that the Niners are in Santa Clara and not as many options right outside their front door as there would be outside many other NFL cities' front doors. So tongue in cheek or not, it's a reality that might help the Niners try to get through this and maintain all the discipline that they're going to need to get through this season as healthy as possible. When we come on back, hello, Rich Aurelia. We're going to be talking a little baseball with him. It's been a while since we've said hello to Richie. That's coming up. We're going to get back to that 49ers press conference. We haven't heard from Jimmy Garoppolo. And the Niners are going to have one of the best backfields in all of football. We'll explain what the numbers are crunching there. Tight end, boy, I'm telling you, if Jordan Reed stays healthy, things get interesting real quick for an offense that is already pretty darn interesting in its own right. Don't you go anywhere. We got an awful lot still coming up today. We're brought to you by the radio.com app. Search 95.7 The Game. You add it to your favorites. Don't miss a second. Whether you're at home, in your car, or at work, use the rewind feature to pick up on any interview or any segment you might have missed in the last 24 hours. It's all right there for you. Radio.com. Favorite our station. Rich Aurelia joins us next. Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Arthritis pain, sore muscles, joints, and more.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Thanks so much for being here today, Damon Ratto and Kolsky. It's wonderful to have you along. It's been a while since we've said hello to our friend Rich Aurelia, former San Francisco Giant, all-around good guy. And before we talk any baseball, because I knew that you crossed paths with him more than once or twice, what are your feelings, Rich, on the passing of Ralph Barbieri?
First of all, thanks for having me back on, guys. It's good to hear your voices again. I did Ralph's show for a few years, when I had my first go around with the Giants, and saddened to hear of his passing. But I think the one thing people need to realize, and I think all you guys kind of knew him a little bit, he wasn't always that personality that we came across on the radio. You know, I kind of looked at it as that was his job. And every time he was around a clubhouse with his son, he was very respectful, very nice gentleman, and, just sad to hear his loss.
I tell you, I was really surprised to see how personal Barry Bonds said goodbye to Ralph Barbieri on social media. And it was an insight into the softer side of Barry. And again, you've always been such a great guy and so easy to get along with. And Ralph could be like that, too, when you'd get him off the air. There's no doubt about it. Richie, how's the family? How's everyone doing, man? You staying safe and sound?
Yeah, everybody is everybody's in good shape. Everybody's healthy. Knock wood, we all stay that way in these crazy times, man.
So,
how's the wine going?
Yeah, that's the important question, Ray. You know what? Wine's actually going pretty well. I think a lot more people are taking advantage of having wine delivered to their front door. And I think in these sheltered-in-place times, I think people are delving a little bit more into the alcohol when they're home. So things are okay right now.
Are you among those?
I am among those. I did take a little break for about a month because I wasn't feeling too well. And
that's a long hangover.
Yeah, I wasn't feeling well for other reasons.
Okay.
Let's just say I don't have a lot of confidence in the testing system right now. So I'm back on the horse. We just bottled some Cabernet last week and did some barrel sampling with some Pinot Noir. So all is good in the Red Stitch wine world for us.
I want to ask you a baseball question, then I'll turn it back over to Matt.
Sure.
As you look at the Giants, you see a team that's not very sound defensively right now. How easy a fix is that? Or is this something that fans are just going to have to live with as long as these are the guys they put out in the field every day?
Well, I think I'm going to lean towards you're just going to have to deal with it right now. You know, you had some injuries to start the season off in the infield with Belton Longoria. Other guys haven't been playing up to their potential, I guess you would say, defensively. Other guys are being played out of position, playing positions they've not played before. So I think that it's something that will probably last most or the rest of the season, depending on how long it goes. But I think it does. What contributes to it too is just the shortened training time. I mean, I don't remember them having this much defensive problems in regular spring training. And now they have the quick, you know, summer camp, boom, here you go, go play, you know, go play some games. So I think it's a combination of things, but I do think in the long term it's fixable in a sense of got to get back to fundamentals. I mean, I think at times this team and the way they're built now with management and coaching, I think a little too much is being emphasized on sabermetrics and analytics as opposed to, hey, man, we're going to do an infield today, and this is where the cutoff man is going to be, and you got to hit the cutoff man. I mean, there's something to be said for fundamentals in baseball, and I think right now with the change in this organization, I don't think enough emphasis is being put on that.
That you sort of just identified a lot of the things we've been talking about as it regards the defense today. And I guess let me tie on to that as someone who played infield defense. Do you think the shift is part of that sort of added confusion and difficulty that maybe until they can secure the fundamentals, they shouldn't be shifting around as much as they are?
Well, I think we just have to get used to everybody who's a Giants fan of watching. If Farhan's the running the organization and Gabe's the manager, I mean we know what they're all about, and you're gonna have these shifts regardless. I mean, I think last night we saw a little frustration in Johnny Cueto when a ground ball was hit right at shortstop and Crawford was playing behind second base. You know, and then Arenado hits a home run and they're back in the game. You know, I think what this does, though, honestly, guys, is it takes away from the learning process and the knowledge of what a player sees on defense in an infield. I mean, we would always listen. We didn't have all these sabermetrics when I was playing, but I mean, we would have our defensive meetings with our infield coach before the series, and we would have individual meetings with the pitchers who were pitching that day, the starting pitchers. This is how I'm going to pitch this guy. You know, maybe shade him the pole a little bit or whatever. I mean, it was done differently, but not to these extremes where there's certain instances where there's no possible way you could turn a double play. There's a 50-50 chance on a certain hit ground ball that a runner from first, if you don't get him at second for the force out, there's a pretty good chance he could just keep going and go all the way to third and take an extra base. I think numbers-wise, when you look at it, percentage, yeah, it works because you're just going based off of what the numbers and the video and the stats show you. But I mean, a lot of times, I don't think guys are very happy, especially the pitchers, with some of these shifts.
Rich Aurelia here on 95.7 The Game, and I don't want you to talk for him, but what do you think a guy with an established gold glove like Brandon Crawford thinks of being put out of position when he sees that happen? I mean, there were a number of things that contributed to the Giants' loss last night, that one play among them. I mean, you know, cornerbacks in football have to have short memories. I guess shortstops who are gold glovers shifted out of the ability to make a play needs to have a short memory too?
I guess so. And, you know, it's none of those guys' faults. I mean, they're employees and they're doing what they're being told to do. The problem comes or arises when, you know, if your pitcher is going to pitch a guy a certain way and you're playing the exact opposite of where the way he's pitching a guy, then you run into trouble. But a guy like Craw, I mean, at least for me, the guy's, you know, veteran now and a multiple gold glove winner, an all-star, World Series guy. I mean, I would trust him to judge where he wants to play somebody. I mean, based off of what he sees. But again, this game is totally, totally different now where I couldn't even tell you, honestly, if there are meetings with infielders before a series or whatever, because now everything's in a binder or on a computer where you just go look. And, you know, and you know what? I'll tell you one thing that I'll tell you one thing that bugs me. Baseball isn't, at least in my mind, that difficult a sport to remember where you have to play a certain hitter. Everybody I see in the field now for every team has like an index card in their back pocket to try and figure out, you know, where am I supposed to play this guy? You know, I see it all the time where an outfielder between outs, like pulls something out, looks at it, walks over to where he's supposed to play. I've seen infielders have, I mean, the catcher has like the quarterback wristband on, you know, to flip the thing up to see what pitches to call. I mean, I personally don't remember the game being that intricate and involved, but maybe I've been out of it too long and I haven't seen the other side of it.
Yeah, Richie, what was your favorite quadrant to play in?
Hey, man, I'll tell you this. I know when I played some second base in my career, I wasn't even comfortable playing on the outfield grass a little bit because I was afraid of the lip between the dirt and the outfield grass that the ball would hit that. Nonetheless, to put me like in short right field and get a one hopper and try and throw a guy out at first base. I mean, it's really changed. And I think it does contribute to, you know, offensive numbers, meaning average being down the last couple of years. But I mean, I'd like to say it's a fad and it'll go away, but I don't think it's going away anytime soon.
Shifting to offense, the games now are averaging 18 strikeouts between the two teams every game. Is that a trend that is going to ever reverse itself, or are we basically looking at just this army of guys who are just going to swing from the heels and basically worry about barreling up rather than just making contact?
Until that side of the game, until somebody new comes around and changes the philosophy or the theories on hitting, with the combination of everybody and every bullpen in the big leagues pretty much throwing 96, 97 miles an hour, I mean, that's a recipe for strikeouts. And Ray, you guys have watched the game for a long time. I mean, there's an art to hitting with two strikes. There's an art to hitting a ground ball at second base and getting a guy to third with, you know, with nobody out. I don't know if that's taught anymore. You know, I just think what I see is a lot of, I would say, cookie cutter swings where everybody's taught to swing on this same, you know, angle plane because the ultimate angle you get, and if you make the perfect contact, well, then the launch angle is going to be this, and the exit velocity is going to be this, and then there's supposed to be a home run 98% of the time. I mean, that's what the game has come to, and I think the art of, you know, guys getting 200 hits, guys, you know, hitting with two strikes and behind in the count, I mean, there's few and far between now. That can do that kind of stuff.
Rich, what was Ichiro's launch angle?
Ichiro's launch angle was probably negative. -5 because he knew, see, but that's the thing. He was a back control guy, so he knew if he just needed to get a single, all he had to do was put it on the ground. He knew if he needed to hit a fly ball, he could do it. I don't know in this day and age if there's a lot of players that can back control like that anymore. You know, that's why you see these games, like Ray said, everything's averaging 18 strikeouts. Nobody emphasizes not striking out anymore. I mean, they really don't. And when I played, I mean, I took pride in not striking out. I mean, I didn't want to strike out. I'd rather, with 0-2, I'd rather give myself a chance and put the ball in play and have somebody boot it or fall down or something than just striking out. So I don't know if this will be around for a really long time, but it sure does seem like it's going to be around.
So maybe this is unfair to put you on the spot like this, but I agree with everything you just said, which always makes me wonder, especially because I prefer the older look of baseball where there were less strikeouts and more balls in play. what do you do? Like, if you're in charge right now, if I make you not just the commissioner, but the owner of the entire league, so you could do whatever you wanted, would you take steps to somehow try to encourage people not to play for the home run all the time?
I don't know, because that's every organization's individual desire of what they want. I would say, you know, one thing I would possibly do is I would not let three infielders be on one side of second base at one time. I'm okay if you put the guy like maybe behind second and the other guy in short right field, but not logging down where you have your shortstop playing straightaway second base, your second baseman in short right field, and your first baseman on the line. I think that would open up some other types of offense. But as far as guys, you know, changing their swings, I mean, you know, listen, everybody likes home runs, but, you know, there's something to be said for strategy in a game. And now looking forward, guys, tell me if I'm wrong, but this universal DH goes through 21, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, we may not see a National League style game ever again with strategy, with double switches and, you know, pitchers learning how to bunt and stuff like that. So it's interesting, and we're seeing a bunch of different things this season based off of circumstance, like with the extra innings and stuff like that. Who knows if this stuff will be around, but I don't know. We could have seen the last of the National League style game that we'll see for a really long time.
Rich Aurelia here on 95.7 The Game. I don't think I'll ever get used to the DH in the National League. I hate the three batter minimum, because it just that's not how strategy is implemented by a manager who knows what he's doing with the bullpen. I do have to admit, though, as much as I wanted to hate the runner on second and extra innings, nothing gets me to flip my channel faster to that game than that situation. So in that regard, if I'm drawn to it like a magnet, I guess I really don't hate it. I'll go ahead and admit that. Let me just ask you, 24-year-old, 1996, young, single, hanging out, Rich Aurelia. Wouldn't you rather get out for a night on the town on a Saturday home game than play 18 innings?
Yeah, probably. But at 24 years old, I'm keeping my mouth shut, just sitting there. But, you know, it is an interesting situation with that. And you would think that most teams would all kind of handle it similarly, but they don't. Again, some teams can't bunt and get a guy to third, because then the defense is going to walk the next guy, set up a double play, this and that. But you don't see that happen everywhere. You've seen everything kind of happen in those circumstances so far. So I don't know what to think about that. You know, you did mention you can't get used to the DH. Well, I'll tell you one group that really likes the idea of the DH, I think, is the Players Association, because they got collective bargaining coming up again. The DH is always a higher paying position. And if you have 26 men on a roster and you have your DH, it's a high paying position, which looks good at the books at the end of the year when, you know, you're looking at the Players Association salaries and stats and numbers.
What's the horrible rule change that hasn't happened yet, but that you're sure you'll see in the next couple of years?
Horrible rule. Haven't had it happen yet. I got to be honest. I honestly think that rosters will expand again in the next few years, which will make it easier for this style of game to be played, where you have platoons at most of your positions. You have relievers, you have, you know, like 12 relievers in the bullpen or whatever it is. And I think that's going to basically, as much as you try to speed up the game, I think it's going to slow down the game a little bit more. So I think that's something I really don't want to see. There's a beauty to dealing with a certain amount on a roster for 162 games. I understand why it's expanded this year for sure. But once you do it one time, you know, it's always open up for discussion. because one side can say, well, we did it and it worked out pretty good. You know, so we'll see where we go. But I think this year is going to, however long it lasts, I think there's going to be some precedent moving through that collective bargaining agreement after next season.
How much do you miss 24-year-old Rich Aurelia?
You know, if you asked me that when I was like 38, I'd probably say, man, I really miss that. But now that I'm 48, I'm good, man. I'm all good. I'm good. I had my day in the sun and my fun, and, you know, now I'm just enjoying, you know, just being home, being a dad, running a winery. All is good in my neck of the woods.
That's experience talking, kids. You make a note of that, and you write that down. Rich, thank you for joining us. We're really happy that you're feeling good again. Don't know what happened there. I think we can all lean towards what might have happened. But, boy, we're glad that you're feeling well. Best to you, the winery, the family. Thanks for joining us, man.
Yeah, guys, thanks. And all you guys, be safe and healthy out there. And Ray, if I ever see you again, I'll have some wine for you, buddy.
Good, because, you know, the thing that I've always found, I'm incredibly thirsty.
We got to keep Ray well hydrated. Thank you very much, Rich Aurelia, here on 95.7 The Game. Great guy, hell of a giant, forever giant. Billy Hamilton, forever giant, by the way.
Ray Ratto, we should note, he gets grumpy when he's dehydrated, so we have to avoid that at all costs.
I also get grumpy when I'm hydrated. In fact, any state of dration,
that's the joke,
irritates me. He horrified me with his answer to my question about what's the next, you know, horrible rule change, because I believe they still have some in their pocket they can haul out. But the idea of making the game longer.
Oh, boy.
Right now, and I know it's short sample size, and we only played 137 games so far. Average time of game is up 2 minutes over last year, which was the longest in Major League history. And that might level off once these doubleheaders come in and they're all seven innings. But
don't be fooled.
This is the average time for a nine-inning game. It's already 2 minutes faster than, or longer than a year ago. I believe they are incapable of slowing the game down. Speeding it up.
I can shave those 2 minutes off right now. And all it takes is the same penny that you had to wear whenever you were on the other team at the YMCA in your gym class. Why are Major League right and left fielders shagging foul balls in a Major League Baseball game? I understand you can't bring in ball dudes and dudettes. You're not looking to give those, you're not looking to mix COVID carriers with people who are, you know, living a safer life, air quotes.
Especially not Giants ball dudes. Those guys are all at high risk.
But come on, like, why can't you take yesterday's starting pitcher, put his ass in a penny so no one confuses him wearing the same uniform on the field, and just say, you're shagging balls today. Anything that's, you know, rattling around in the corner, get up, run, go get it. I just saved you 4 minutes. There's 4 minutes of Major League corner outfielders dawdling after foul balls built into all these games now.
Although, in fairness, I think a bigger time drain is when the outfielders get those foul balls and then spend a minute looking for what absence of fan to throw the ball to.
Isn't that weird? Are they trying to throw it to some usher or someone who is now going to take the ball and put the ball?
I think they're looking around to see if there's anybody to throw it to.
Yeah, maybe it's force of habit. I don't know. But
maybe
they're trying to
decide which cardboard cutout they want to hit in the face.
If the cardboard cutouts went all the way down the lines, I'd say it's got to be great sport in and of itself. God, just wing one, hit somebody's picture of a dog, anything.
But which season ticket holder has the most hittable face? Let's find out tonight. We have our longest commercial-free segment of the day right around the corner. You're going to hear from Jimmy Garoppolo. We're going to talk about The Rock being an investor in the XFL. We're going to have a Tuesday trifecta for you to set it up. It's going to be lovely, and a list of demands from Pac-12 players leaning into our trifecta. So stick around. Still plenty more coming up. You want to get yourself in line because we're going to start the trifecta a little early today. You can do it sight unseen right now at 888-957-9570. A ton when we come on back, though. Don't you move a muscle. Damon Ratto and Kolsky, again, thanks to Rich Aurelia for joining us. That was great. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full-service banking, no compromises.
Now back to Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Good to have you here this afternoon. It's our longest segment of the day. We're going to hit you with a little Tuesday trifecta earlier than usual because we're going to end today's show with a very interesting guest. Hannibal Thompson is a local comedian who has been hustling late night, open mic night, comedy clubs that are not glamorous. He's got himself a special coming out. I mean, that is local boy made good. We're going to say hello to Hannibal Thompson in about an hour from now. A guy who's been on the show in the past, been in studios when we used to do shows from studios in another life. We're going to catch up with him in about an hour from now on 95.7 The Game. Damon Ratto and Kolsky, obviously Giants baseball continues the season-long 10-game road trip this evening in Colorado. They dropped the Rocky opener last night, and tonight it's Kevin Gausman looking for his first win of the season, trying to get the Giants back to .500, making his first start of his career, the much-anticipated starting debut of Jesus Luzardo at the Coliseum as the Rangers come home the A's come home to take on the Texas Rangers. Lance Lynn, not an easy out, is pitching for the Rangers tonight. So, two very interesting baseball games for us to watch. We got the NBA a-bubbling. We all know about that, and we've been having fun with that. We are going to, just for a moment, turn our attention to the 49ers. We've already heard from Richard Sherman, who was talking about, you know, it being down in Santa Clara and being a team with Super Bowl aspirations should be enough to keep us focused. Jimmy Garoppolo, he was talking about his backfield. And it's funny that when we talk about the 49ers backfield, the guy that Jimmy's thinking might help the most is the guy that we haven't really talked about at all because he got here and then never played. Of course, we're talking about Jarrett McKinnon. Jimmy Garoppolo on why he thinks Jarrett McKinnon is about to have a splash.
Being a former quarterback, it's kind of a rarity to have a skill position guy who sees the game like a quarterback still. And Jet does a great job of that. I mean, even just throwing routes on air this offseason, he runs them differently than most running backs, and he has a feel that's like a receiver, but he feels space like a quarterback. It's very unique, and I'm excited to get him back, man. It's been a while. You know, we came in together, me and him, when we both signed here, and it's exciting to have him back.
We have talked a lot over the last few days, over the last couple weeks, over his entire career, about Jimmy Garoppolo and what he does and doesn't do, and Ray Ratto's refrain has always been, he does exactly what Kyle Shanahan wants him to do. Did that sound like Kyle Shanahan speaking, or did that sound like Kyle Shanahan speaking? That's why he's here, is because Jarek McKinnon runs routes different than most running backs. That's why Kyle Shanahan targeted him as the free agent he wanted for his backfield, and hopefully we do get to see it. Right? That's what we've been waiting for.
I think it's a lot easier to do Zoom calls for Kyle Shanahan when nobody can see his hand up the back of Jimmy Garoppolo's shirt to make sure he's and I don't mean to denigrate Garoppolo by saying that, but he literally is that extension of his coach, at least publicly. If he rails about the kind of throws he's asked to make or the number of times he's supposed to hand off the ball, he keeps it very much to himself. And talking of Jarek McKinnon is one of those things that you do when you're thinking like a coach rather than like an athlete. Because what he's saying there is he's played zero downs, but I regard him as important. And if he plays some this year, I will treat him as if he was. That is so, not just Kyle Shanahan, but every modern coach that's been hired in the last 10 years. You keep everybody interested, even if they don't see much time, or in this case, none at all.
Amen to that. By the way, a little showbiz tip. Nothing is worse than ventriloquism on the radio, so we won't do any of it. Matt Williamson put together a top 25 running backs in the NFL, Pro Football Talk Weekly, NFL Guide, whatever it comes from. I don't even know. But it's an unscientific poll. This is a man's opinion, but I'm only going to tell you his opinion because I think it bodes well for the 49ers. So he put together his top 25 running backs in all of football. And the Niners have Raheem Mostert coming in at number 23 with this description of Mostert isn't the biggest and most powerful, but he doesn't mess around with the ball in his hands. He hits the hole hard. Every inch he gets is earned, and he has the ability to break off the long run, which is exactly what Kyle Shanahan wants in his system. Raheem Mostert is at number 23. Tevin Coleman, he has at number 25. Coleman, a smooth mover with a longer stride than most running backs, can eat up grass when he gets in the open field. He also has plenty of passing game acumen. Is he a tease or is he just going to put it all together with his high pad level and just an average change of direction? Coleman is more likely a tease, but Kyle Shanahan sure likes him. So number 23 and number 25 aren't exactly the sexiest spots to hold in anyone's top 25 list. However, the 49ers are the only team in the NFL, other than the Cleveland Browns, to have two backs appear on this list. Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, by the way, came in at numbers 7 and 13. This is a list that, again, did not include the running back that Jimmy Garoppolo was just talking about being very excited about. So they've also got McKinnon, two really interesting, according to Matt Williamson, top 25 backs. You add that to the best fullback in the NFL, saying that the Niners should expect to have the best running game in football isn't a bar that should be impossible for them to clear, especially when they added Trent Williams to block.
Can I make a very bizarre analogy for you guys?
Yes.
No, keep it to yourself.
Sorry, Ray. You've been overruled. Two against one.
It would have been one against one, and you still would have done it.
That's true. There is something, and this may be sort of awkward because maybe the offensive line is really the group that should take this moniker. But, you know, in like a jazz band, you talk about the rhythm section. It's basically piano, bass, and drums for the most part, without overcomplicating it. And in a lot of ways, I think the run game is the rhythm section of an NFL offense, and the diversity of that run game makes the rhythm section better. So if your rhythm section is Kittle and Reed at tight end, not to mention, you know, Ross Dwelly ain't half bad as a third guy, plus a three-headed running back group, that's the sort of thing Kyle Shanahan wants to be working with. That lays the foundation of everything he wants to do as an offensive play caller.
I have a question about the list, and since I don't have it in front of me, I simply have to ask you, where did they have Mark Ingram, and where did they have Gus Edwards? Because that's as close to a two-headed backfield as either of those other two teams, and Cleveland a year ago wasn't nearly that run heavy as Matt Williamson seems to suggest they're going to be.
Not to mention Lamar Jackson being part of the running game in Baltimore.
Well, I was going to exclude him, but he should have been on this list.
Right.
I mean, so he had 1,206 yards. So
Ingram was on the list. The other was not. I don't have the list in front of me other than the notes I made about the Niners, and I figured people would want to know the top five. Number one, McCaffrey. Number two, Saquon Barkley. Number three was Zeke Elliott. Number four, Alvin Kamara. Number five, your guy, Ray, Dalvin Cook, came in at number five. Josh Jacobs of the Raiders, after a strong rookie year, comes in at number nine. He's a top 10 guy already, and I'm not here to tell you he's not. He was phenomenal. So, but that is a legit question. It's a good question. And Lamar Jackson being factored into a running game is something that 100% has to happen. But I guess he's looking at running back from the position of RB only, not QB who can, RB who is.
Yeah, well, Lucas just yelled at me that Ingram was 21. Because I think Baltimore loves the run more than just because they have Lamar Jackson. I think John Harbaugh is as sort of philosophically aligned to Bill Belichick and Kyle Shanahan as any coach in the league. All the others prefer to throw the ball and prefer to throw the ball a lot. But I think Baltimore uniquely loves to eat up time by having the ball in the hands of a running back, because it makes life for their defense so much easier. I mean, they allowed barely, you know, less than 20 a game. 17, they allowed 17 a game. They were third in the league at that, and part of that is because they were so high in time of possession.
Yeah, I don't know if it's actually as small a number of head coaches who want to do that as you would think, because there's a surprising number of sort of old schoolish guys still around. But undoubtedly, Kyle Shanahan sees the game a little bit differently than most of the other people. And I think, again, based on what we've seen him do as the de facto GM, I almost think he'd rather have 21 and 25 and a guy in McKinnon who he probably sees as like 27 than a top five guy with someone in the 30s. You know what I mean? I think he prefers to have a bunch of pretty good guys with specific skills that he can utilize, and that's what he's got.
And the last thing you need is a guy making $14 million a year blowing out a knee, and then all of a sudden your depth is just gone at a position where you've got to have it. And the Niners are going to have the deepest backfield week one in the NFL without a single move, without making a move in addition. No one gets cut. Starting tomorrow, with the knowledge that we have, with the names that we see, the Niners have the deepest backfield in football, including the fullback. So lots for Kyle Shanahan to play with. We all know that Jordan Reed is the new toy that showed up this week. Is it a damaged toy? Yes. The concussion concerns are going to be monitored by the practice, much less the game, I would assume, on Jordan Reed. The guy has had 7 documented concussions in 6 NFL seasons, none of which he was able to play all 16 games. But when he's out there, he matters. He's mattered as a primary receiving tight end. What might he look like next to George Kittle in a 2 tight end set? The way that Kyle Shanahan can tinker. Ooh, that's going to be an awful lot of fun coming up. And by the way, welcome to your 5 o'clock hour.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
Colorado Rockies put up a very crooked number against the Giants last night, end up winning a game that they were trailing. So is life at Coors Field, and so is life when you're a little bit of a sloppy baseball team, which, let's be honest, the San Francisco Giants are a sloppy baseball team right now. Not an opinion, a measurable fact. They lead the National League in errors. They lead the National League in guys not being in the right position. I feel like they lead the National League in not being able to hit the cutoff guy right now. And the criticism of Kapler that his teams, he himself may not be the most attentive to detail manager that you would think. I mean, I don't know if I'm ready to put any of this ugly, disjointed start on Gabe Kapler based on the circumstances which this restart, or, you know, it's not a restart, but the circumstances under which the season got underway. And look, it's not like Kapler's screwing up the foul balls. You could say, well, Kapler shouldn't have put him, Dickerson, in right field. Kapler didn't. Farhan did.
And they don't have a ton of great options. Let's just be serious here.
Totally. There's that, too. And I'm also, you know, Kapler didn't miss the cutoff guy.
Nor leave home plate all by itself.
Yeah, I think Kapler has to own some of this, because some of this is teaching. And he's responsible for that. Now, I get that this has been a bizarre year for trying to teach young players how to play at the major league level. Not just hitting a curveball, but how to be in the right place at the right time. That's all stuff that happens in spring training. And it happens on, you know, if you're doing it right, it happens during BP before games. But they have such a weird dichotomy of a roster where it's either way too young or pretty old. And he's in game 10. So I think at some point he has to establish that the game needs to be played the way he envisions it or the way Farhan envisions it, because this isn't it. This is very much sort of high risk, moderate reward, because when you try to win just by outscoring people, eventually that runs out. And
we really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.